Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Ted Amud Aleph, four lines down. We're in the middle of a piece of Gemara that does not belong in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi has a piece on the Chet that ends with the discussion of the baskets and the Aleph Bet Gimel. And then it launched into a sidebar about Shi'urim, based on the Shi'ur of the Kupah. That's a Gemara that's lifted out of other places and has continued all the way through onto Ted Amud Aleph, almost down to before the Mishnah over here. Again, it was put in much later period. The early Yerushalmis do not have this Gemara in it at all. Even the later Yerushalmis, where it was added in, the Girsaot are very, very problematic, and we'll do our best to work through it. Some of it should be familiar from Psachim. It's a little review of what we saw in Psachim, and that's what we're starting here on the fourth line, is something that we saw on Daf Kuf Chet in Psachim, which was Kamu Shi'ur Shel Kos. What is the Shi'ur Shel Kos? Kos we're speaking about here is a Revi'it. So what's the size of a Kos that holds a Revi'it inside of it? We know we discussed there the size of a Mikveh, and then based on that, we got to the size of a Kos Revi'it, the relationship between the two of them. So now we have Rabbi Yossi b'shem Rabbi Yossi ben Pazi, v'Rabbi Yossi bar Bibi b'shem Rabbi Shmuel, Etzba'ayim al Etzba'ayim, Arom. Now we have here in the Gemara Etzba, which is incorrect, it should be Arom Etzba'ayim as well, which is its two Etzba'ot high, Umechsa, and then a half an Etzba, and then again in the Gemara in Psachim, it's V'chomesh Etzba, and a fifth of an etzba. It should not be a shlish of an etzba. It would end up being 2 by 2 by 2.7 etzbaot, which gives you the revi'it based on the relationship of 40 sa'ah that is found in a mikveh that is 1 by 1 by 3 amot. So based on that calculation, the Gemara and Psachim came to these numbers with regards to kos revi'it. Over here, again, the girsa is problematic. It's brought down with seemingly the wrong numbers in it. Although Tosafot back in the Gemara and Psachim Daf Kuftet tries to reconcile the language of the Yerushalmi and say that the measurements here are be the etzbaot ziporiot, and there in the Bavli it's talking about midbariot. In addition to that, he says that in the Bavli they're measuring on a squared basis, square volumetric basis. Here in the Yerushalmi they're doing it on a circular basis, and from through that he tries to reconcile between the two girsaot. Now, Rabbonon de Kezari, ve Rabbi Yossi bar Bibi b'shem Shmuel, Atio de Rabbi Noton ki Rabbi Shimon. The statement of Rabbi Noton goes with position of Rabbi Shimon. Now that's also problematic. It's unlikely that it's Rabbi Shimon. It's more likely that it's Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Yehuda, not Rabbi Shimon. So we'll go with that girsa of Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Yehuda. So that's Atio de Rabbi Noton ki Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Yehuda. Kama de Rabbi Yossi be Yehuda amar birivit. Just like what Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Yehuda said by Revit. Kain amar Rabbi Noton birivit. So too, Rabbi Natan said by Ravit, Lishikrosh viebo kezayit. Once it hardens, it turns into a kezayit. So this understanding that there's a relationship between liquid and solid measurements, and that if you move between the two of them, that the equivalent measurement, when you take a liquid and have it coagulate, here they're really talking about blood, if blood coagulates, then if you started out with a Ravit of blood, it will result in a solid item that is a kezayit large. And vice versa, if you started out with a kezayit and then it liquefied, it would turn into a revi'it. So if you want to determine if something has a revi'it after it's already hardened, then you use kezayit as the threshold. Now we might have an incident like this, which is Rabbi Simon, Shem Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Maaseh bepirdat Rabbi. There's a case with one of the pradot, one of the mules of Rabbi, Shemeto, it died, v'ti'aru et dama, mishum nevela. They said that its blood didn't have tum'at nevela. Now this is a non-kosher animal. Non-kosher animal that dies, the carcass has a din of nevela. Question is, what's the status of the blood here? Does the blood have a status of nevela or not? Well, it depends on how much blood you're talking about. And that's what they said here. Vishal, Rabbi, it's got to be Elazar, not Eliezer, because we're talking about Namora. Vishal, Rabbi Elazar, it's Rabbi Simon, ad kama. Until how much? Where is that threshold that it remains tahor? Lo ashkachbe, he did not respond to him. Vishal, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Then he asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Amalei, ad revi'it tahor. Yoter mi revi'it tamei. Then until a revi'it it is tahor, once you cross over the threshold of revi'it, it becomes tamei. The understanding being that once you hit that threshold of revi'it of dam, that would coagulate to make a kezayit of nevela. Kezayit of nevela is the minimum amount of nevela that you need in order to be tameh. Kezayit is the sheer nevela. So in order to have the equivalent by dam, you would have to have a revit of dam to get to the equivalent of a kezayit when it comes to nevela. Now, uba'ash the Rabbi Lazar, al delo chazale Rabbi Shimon Shmuta. Rabbi Lazar was ba'ash, you have in the chumash with regards to uba'ash hayor. We're talking about that by the fish. he was upset, he was dismayed, but there it's used a much stronger term, ba'ash, is more like it stunk, it rotted. Here too, he was very upset about this issue that he posed the question when they were learning here that Rabbi Elazar was upset about the fact that Rabbi Simon did not respond to him on this issue. Rabbi Aviyotiv, Matne Hadein Ugda, he was sitting and saying over this incident with Rabbi. Amale Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna Kahena Ad Revi'it Tahor Yotermikan Tame. Like this, until Revi'it is Tahor, more than this is Tame. Uva'atbe. And he, Ba'atbe can be used in different contexts. One is that he kicked him, that he gave him a kick. The other one is that he took a sandal in his hand and he knocked him. And he was pushing in this case. So he was upset at him for some reason. So Amalei Rabbi Zirika, Rabbi Zirika says to him, it's not an answer, he's posing it as a question here. It's more of a question. Rabbi Bibi was saying over this incident, and Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna said, is this true? You know, meaning Kaina, is this true only up to Revit? He's querying him, is there a threshold of Revit over here? Ba'atbe, and then Rabbi Bibi got upset at him. Where the Karban Eid, the reason it's Rabbi Simon, but Rabbi Simon's not in this sugi over here. He might have had a different girsa. Amar lei Rabbi Zirika. So Rabbi Zirika pipes up and says, "Begin the shalach ad badbe." Just because he asked you a question, you get all upset at him, you kick him. Amar lei begin to lo havadati ki beitna be. Says the reason that I kicked him or I got upset at him is not because he did anything wrong, but it's because of my circumstances. My circumstances don't let me to be at ease or settled, and because I'm unsettled, I'm uneasy, causes me to be bo'et in him. Amar Rabbi Hanan. Now he brings the reason as to why he was unsettled or not at ease. Because of the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Vayu chayecha tkuyim lecha mineged, v'chadta laila v'yomam, v'lo tamin b'chayecha." This is in the Tokacha that's found in the end of Sefer Devarim. So now the Gemara is going to break it down into three components here, which is, "Vayu chayecha tkuyim lecha mineged." This is someone who buys his produce for a full year. He doesn't own land. So he buys produce from a producer, from a landowner, for the entire upcoming year. So he's okay, but he just doesn't know what next year is going to bring because he doesn't plant, he doesn't have land, so he can't necessarily guarantee that he's going to have food for next year. Now you'll be fearful day and night. This is someone who buys from, call it a wholesaler, buys food from someone who supplies people who don't have their own food. So he's buying from some sort of wholesaler for week to week or month to month. He's buying over a shorter duration than a year, but he's buying it on a regular basis. Again, the same problem, which is that he's dependent on other people's production, or the fact that there's food available. If there's a shortage in food, he's the last guy on the food chain because he doesn't produce his own. Velo tamin b'chayecha, you won't be able to believe in your own life. There means that you're going to be fearful of dying. Ze lokeach min apaltor. That's someone who buys from the baker each day. And this is someone who's day-to-day dependent on whatever supply is in the retail store in the bakery. So there, that person is velo tamin b'chayecha. That's the most significant or serious of these issues. That they didn't have, again, refrigeration and freezer space. Correct. So it's not anything like what we would experience today where we go shopping all the time. There, you were dependent on your own production in general for your food. And if you had to depend on others for your food production, then you were in a much worse situation. It's very risky for you. Because if there are any shortages, you were definitely the one who was going to end up with the shortage. That nothing came to market in those cases. And you didn't have a guarantee that if you planted that you would have something because you didn't plant anything. You don't have land. So land ownership was considered to be something essential. Someone who didn't have land lost significant rights. We have that even until the Middle Ages. Also over here, where the Gemara talks about Ole Regalim, we'll talk about that. You wouldn't be able to be Ole Regal if you don't have land. I mean, that the Torah says, but it's a conception of land ownership being essential to certain stature or certain standing within society. People who didn't have land were at a significant disadvantage. And then on top of that, the bigger the disadvantage is, the more frequently you have to go to market to purchase. Because then who knows what's going to be there the next day. You know, it's not like the bakeries. Today you go there every day, they have the big items there. They're dependent on the deliveries or whether the farmer showed up, if he had produce. So you were very, very at risk if you went to buy each day. It's three different levels of poverty risk factors, and the larger the risk, the more difficult one's life is. It seems to be that I'm talking about chitim here, not other produce. The basic food item, which is bread. Start with chitim, and then ends up with the baker, which is, we're talking about bread. Bread, which is the fundamental of all sustenance and meals here, is the central part of any meal. So he says, va'ano, I myself, smicha aplotor. That's me. I'm the one who buys from the baker every day. So that's why I'm uneasy.
Because I
can't get myself comfortable. I'm always at unease or at risk that I'm not going to have food for the next day. Okay, so umau kedon. The Gemara comes and says, what's the din here? Like, my havi'ala. What's the din over here? So, hey, now they quote a Mishnah from Ediot. Mishnah that says, hey, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Petora, al dam nevela shu tahor. He testified that dam nevela is tahor. A tahor over here sounds like there is no tumah whatsoever. Not the revi'it threshold that we saw before. It sounds like dam nevela tahor, no questions asked, no threshold. Gemara tries to say, ma'u tahor, tahor melach shir. Tahor here doesn't mean tahor in the sense of tumah and tahara, but in the sense of lachshir. It's not a liquid that can be machshir other things to be mekabel tumah. It cannot prep other things to, or prime them to be able to accept tumah. Aval tamot mitameh. But when it comes to its own tumah, there it is, mitameh. So here we're speaking about heksher, the kabel tumah, not inherent tumah in the object. So that's the way the Gemara answers. And the Gemara says, wait a minute, taman taninan. Right, we also have another Mishnah in Machshirin, which would seem to indicate otherwise, which is Dama Sheretz Gibsaro. Blood of a Sheretz has the same din as its skin meaning its flesh. There's no differentiation between blood and flesh skin by the Sheretz. It's Mitame Ke Adasha, the size of a lentil, and there's no differentiation. And there the Mishnah says, Mitame Venu Machshir. It's Mitame because it has a din of Sheretz, but it's not Machshir because it's not classified as a liquid. So therefore it cannot be Machshir, the Kabbal Tumah, cannot prime other objects to be Mekabbal Tumah, but it itself is Tame, the size of a Kedasha. Ve'en Lanu Koyotze Bo. So this is the big statement here. There's nothing else like it. If there's nothing else like it, then we just said that Dam Nevela looks exactly like that. Dam Nevela is Enu Machshir, the Kabbal Tumah, and it's Mitame. So what do you mean there's in Lanu Kiyotze, but we have nothing like this at all? We do have something like this where the dam has a unique din. So then it says, now, Dilma, the Shi'ur Tumato, Shudamo Metame Kubsaro. Maybe the din here that's unique to this blood of the Sheretz is that its size. That the Shi'ur for the Sheretz is a Kadasha lentil because it has a din like the Basar. And that's what's unique. Unique about the blood of the Sheretz is not that it's tahor milahach shir, but it itself is not tahor, but that it is, the shi'ur is exactly like that of the basar, which is that it's a shir ki adasha, and it's a din like the basar. It's not unique in the sense that it's going to cause us a problem for our understanding of dam nevela, but rather it's understanding within this context particularly, which is that it has the dam sheretz kibsaro mitamei venu machshir. That is referring to the size, the shi'ur of tumah, which is a lentil where nowhere else you have that, by a liquid. And then shidamo mitamei kibsaro, and it has the same status as its basar. That is unique to that. But that doesn't affect us with regards to nevela. Nevela, the blood could be differentiated from the basar and could be differentiated from liquids in general. It's tahor milahach shir, but it itself is not tahor. Amar Rabbi Yosi, pligi batrein amoraim. Now, what's the din here? The din here is we have two Amoraim that argue it. Chadamar Tamei, Chadamar Tahor. One of them says that blood of Nevela becomes Tamei after Revi'it. One of them says that he's Tahor the Gamre, that there is no Dam Nevela that is Tamei. Mandamar Tamei, the one who says that it goes past the threshold, Ki Rabbi Yehuda. Now, Rabbi Yehuda, again, does not appear in our Gemara. So to say Ki Rabbi Yehuda is a little bit difficult. Rabbi Yehuda actually appears in Ediot, in Perek Hei, the first Mishnah in Ediot, where he explains that there are certain machlokot, that whole parak is dedicated to chumrei beit hillel v'kulei beit shammai, certain things or certain instances where beit hillel was more machmir than beit shammai. And the first thing that he mentions there in that mishnah is the issue of dam nevela. And there he says beit hillel is mitamei, beit shammai is mitaher. So that's the Rabbi Yehuda that we're referencing over here. He holds, whoever is this amora that says that it's tamei, that Amora will also hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, who's the Amora? The Amora we had above. When they had the question with regards to the din at Rabbi's place, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi was the one who said that at a Revit, that is the threshold. Rabbi Elazar was querying. He asked Rabbi Simon, who didn't respond to him. Then he asked Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, who did respond to him, and says Revit. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is the Amora that says Tamei. And he's following this position of Rabbi Yehuda in Ediot. Mandamar Tahor, the Amora that says Tahor, then he holds like Rabbi Yehoshua ben Petora. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Petora is the Mishnah that we just performed from Ediot, which hey, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Petora, dam nevela shu Tahor. So instead of rereading it the way we did, which would say Tahor means it's Tahor milahach shir, but it itself is not Tahor. No, we'll read it literally. Dam nevela Tahor. If you read it literally, then the Amora here who says that Dam Nevela is Tahor will follow that position of Rabbi Yeshua ben Betora who says that exactly that, Dam Nevela is Tahor. Amarle Rav Abduma Demin Chuta Veyut. That makes sense. What you're saying makes a lot of sense, this connection. Why? Did Rabbi Yehuda Moraino de Benesia Hava? Rabbi Yehuda was the posek for the house of the Nasi. And we said before, where was the incident? The incident was in Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's house. That's where the mule passed away. And Rabbi Shua ben Levi said, over there, they said that the dam was tahor up to Revi'it. And that matches with Rabbi Yehuda's testimony in Ediot, that that was the position of Beit Hillel. So if Rabbi Yehuda is the posek for Bei Nasiya of Rabbi, then it makes sense that the Mesorah that we got from that story with Rabbi was that Revi'it was the threshold. So he says that what you connected between Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi and Rabbi Yehuda makes sense because Rabbi Yehuda is the posek for Rabbi. If that's the case, Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi got Mesorah about exactly what happened there, that there was a Psak Halacha by Rabbi Yehuda with regards to this. Alright, now we move back into the Yerushalmi. This comes back into what is actually found in the Yerushalmi, referencing back to our Mishnah, which is Shema Ye'ani Ve'omru. This individual goes in there, has to be careful. Be careful so that nobody suspects that he took money out or he stole money from there, because if he comes poor, people say, you know why he became poor? It's because he took money from the Lishka. And if he comes rich, you know what they're going to say? He got rich because he stole from the Lishka. It's a no-win position, basically. So he has to be naki. You have to do everything above board, so there are no questions here. So Tani Rabbi Yishmael, we have a bright on Rabbi Yishmael that adds in an additional item. Kivetz lo yitrom ipnei chashad. Someone who has very thick and curly hair should not be toreim et alishka because of a chashad. The fear being that they would stick the coin in the curly hair, in the thick hair, and people wouldn't be able to notice it. So we wouldn't let him go in. Now, Tani, Gizbarim, Hayu Mifaspisin Bikil Kin. So they used to comb out or undo any tangled hair. So they used to comb them out, make sure that there was no hair that was tangled, so there was no suspicion of being able to place a coin inside of those hairs. This Mifaspisin Bikil Kin shows up by Nazir, and shows up in the Gemara and Shabbat for obvious reasons about combing on those days where combing out something that's stuck, whether it's a problem of Mesir Seyar, which is a problem both for Shabbat and for Nazir. It shows up in that context. In their day, if they bathe once a week or once a month, hair becomes very matted, tight. So I think that's what they're worried about. You could slip a coin in there. There is, in the Tosefta, our Mishnah obviously disagrees with this, but the Tosefta brings down that they used to pat him down before he went in, and they would pat him down when he came out again. Pat him down when he went in, so he couldn't say, I took the coin in when he came out. Oh, that was my money I took in with me. Pat him down when he came out, make sure he didn't take a coin out. That's what Tosefta says. Our Mishnah does not seem to indicate that that's necessary. We don't even, in the Gemara here, bring Breitel to that effect, that they used to pat him down. Seems to be that that was too far. That was already, to take someone who's a kasher and to suspect him in such a manner that you're going to pat him down, that's a little humiliating beneath their dignity to do such a thing. We don't suspect people that far. And then you have, but it's a simile in airports. People feel that it's demeaning to be patted down. So here is the same idea here, that they didn't want to go that far in patting the individual down. Tani, middabrim hayu imo mishashu nichnasa shehu yotzei. They used to speak to him the whole time while he was in there and on the way out. Why? So he doesn't stick a coin in his mouth. He sticks a coin in his mouth, walks out with that. If he's talking, he can't do that because it'll inhibit his speech. So they speak to him the whole time to prevent him from being able to put it in his mouth. Bimalei pumei moi. I have a better solution. Just fill his mouth with water. Let him go in there with a mouthful of water and he'll spit it out when he comes out. That way we'll know there's no coin in there. He can't open up his mouth because all the water comes spilling out. So here it says, Amar Rabbi Tanchuma mipnei abrocha. Can't be because he needs to make a brocha. He makes a brocha al chumat alishka. Just like you make a brocha on mafrish chumot and masrot, so too you make a brocha on the being mafrish, the chumata lishka. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, B'shem Rabbi Yonatan, Siv Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, who we bumped into earlier in the Masechta, a second, third generation Amor in Eretz Yisrael, B'shem Rabbi Yonatan, who's a first generation Amor in Eretz Yisrael, B'Torah, U'B'Nevim, U'B'Ktuvim, Matzanu, Sh'Adam Tzarich Latzeit Yidei Abriyot, Kader Shehu Tzarich Latzeit Yidei Makom. That a person has to be squeaky clean in the eyes of Hashem, but not only in the eyes of Hashem, but in the eyes of other people. You can't just say, I'm doing what's right, and God knows I'm right, and ignore what everybody else thinks. There's a necessity not only to be shirim and clean and teorim, b'enei elukim, you have to also have it b'enei adam, in the eyes of people. There are many famous stories of gedolim who, for whatever reason, missed minyan one day or came late, And they give a clap afterwards and explain why that was the case. So nobody should suspect that they were oversleeping or they missed minyan or something like that. They used to explain what had happened so that there wouldn't be any suspicion. Darminayin, mina Torah, how do we know this? Dichtiv. Because it says, v'nich b'sharetz lifnei Hashem, v'char tashuvu, v'itim nikiyim, me'Hashem u'mi Yisrael, v'itaretz azot achem lachuzad lifnei Hashem. Found in the end of Sefer Bamidbar with regards to Gad and Ruvain and Chatzi Shevet Menasheh, Moshe is describing their obligation to go out and to wage war in front of the rest of the Am. And he says, if you do this, then you'll be Nikiim Me'Hashem U'mi Yisrael. So there he says that you have to be clean and absolved of any guilt or problems from Hashem as well as Klal Yisrael. So the demand is not only to Hashem, but it's also with regards to Klal Yisrael. V'nevi'im minayin. How do we have this in Nevi'im? Dichtiv. Because there it says, Kel Elokim Hashem, Kel Elokim Hashem. Hu yodeya. V'Yisrael hu yeda. He knows. And he'll let B'nai Yisrael know. Im kemered v'im gmemau b'Hashem al toshinu ayom hazeh. That if this was done as a rebellion or an affront to Hashem, then he won't save us on this day. This is in the story at the end of Sefer Yoshua. Again, with B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain, who build a Mizbeach on Mabrot HaYardain, at the crossing of the Yardain. And from Shiloh, they see this big Mizbeach, and they cannot believe their eyes. They cannot believe that they just, a couple minutes ago, let B'nai Ruvain and B'nai Gad go home. And now they went home and they built a Mizbeach, as if they're not coming back to Shiloh. They're going to have their own Mikdash, they're going to have their own Avodah over there. And they're very upset. They send a delegation with Pinchas and the heads of the Shvatim, of the armies, and they inquire about what's going on here. So B'nai Gad and Ruvain, this is the beginning of their response, say, they make a declaration that God is the God. There's no questions about this. And then they explain themselves. They put this as a siman because they didn't want to be disenfranchised. They don't want in the future generations for it to be that your children are come and say to our children, you're not part of Klal Yisrael because you're on the other side of the Yardain. So this will be a sign or a siman that we are all together, that we on the other side of the Yardain belong to Klal Yisrael. So there they suspected them of doing Avodah Zarah. And it says there that number one, Hu Yodeya, referring to God knows, V'Yisrael Hu Yeda, and he'll let B'nai Yisrael know, meaning that they have to be clean in Hashem's eyes, as well as B'nai Yisrael. It's not just that Hashem has to know that they're right, they also have to let the people there know that they are correct, or what they're doing is not problematic. Bak Tuvim Inayin, where we find in the Pasuk in the Tuvim, Dichtiv Mishlei, it says, it should be familiar to you, Matzachain, V'Seichel Tov B'nai Elokim V'Adam, which changed a little bit, is what found its way into benching, which is that we do it as a request. But that is that you should find favor and be considered wise in the eyes of Elohim, Ve'adam, both God and man. So again, over there, the idea that it's not enough just God, you need man as well in order for it to be clean. Now, we have here Gamliel Zuga. So Gamliel Zuga is a third generation Amora Sha'al. He asked a question, the Rabbi Yossi Beribi Bon. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Bon is all over the place here in the Yerushalmi. And that's because he's a fifth generation Amora. Because he's a very late Amora. So he has a lot of appearances within the Yerushalmi. The problem is that Gamliel Zuga is a third generation Amora. There's no way that he could be asking a question of a fifth generation Amora. It would have been unlikely and probably is the wrong girsa over here. So the alternative is Rabbi Yassa, which is found actually two other times in the Yerushalmi. Gamliel Zuga asks Rabbi Yassa, who is the equivalent of Rabbi Asi. Rabbi Asi was also a third generation Amora, and that would make a lot more sense. Again, first of all, it's found two other times in Yerushalmi that Gamliel Zuga asks or poses questions to him, so it would make a lot of sense. And you can see how the Rabbi Yassa changed into Rabbi Yossi, or Rabbi Yossi Beribi Bon. The other possibility that people suggest is that it's Rabbi Yossi Beribi Chanina. So that would keep most of it intact, except for the bone, it would be Chanina, who was also a second generation Amora, which still could be plausible because Gamaliel Zuga is a third generation. He could have touched a second generation Amora. That's also possible that he would ask someone who is older than him. Whatever it is, you have to change the gear here, otherwise it doesn't make so much sense. Ezua mechuvar shibikulam. What is the clearest proof of all of them? Amalei, the one from the Torah, which is Vayitim Nikim Hashem Yisrael. That's the cleanest proof that you have to be clean in the eyes of Hashem in Israel. That a person obviously has to be Yotzei Yidei Hashem, but he also has to be Yotzei Yidei Adam. People have to think the person's doing the right thing. You can't just say doing the right thing and I don't care what anybody else thinks. Now obviously there's a limit to that. If people are not acting properly or suspicious in a way that it can't be prevented, then you have to do what's right in the eyes of Hashem and you have to ignore what they say. But it's important not just to say, I'm detached from everybody and I don't really care what they think. That's not true. You have to care what they think. You have to care what they think within reason. You have to care what they think if you can solve that problem. If you can't solve the problem, obviously you're not going to be subject to people's whims. Alright, now we move on to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Shel Beit Rabban Gamliel. So Beit Rabban Gamliel are the Shoshelet HaNasi, and Rabban Gamliel was the Nasi right prior to the Khurban. So whoever brought the Machatzit HaShekel on behalf of Beit Rabban Gamliel to the Mikdash, Hayach Nichnas, he used to go to Shiklo Ben Etzbotav, he would have a shekel between his fingers so they could see it, so they knew why he was going in there, and just not stop going in there, he's going there to deposit the money. Zorko Lifnei HaTorim. He does it right before they were Torim Lishka. The Lishka has a large pile of money inside of it, the treasury. And then they go in there, Torim Lishka, which we read in the previous Mishnah, they take the three big baskets, and they scoop out from the pile of money there, they scoop out the monies that were there. So right beforehand, he was tossed the money right in there. But Torim Mitkavein Vidochafo Lakupa. He used to push it into the kupa. He wanted that because then his money would be used for the karbanot. He would be in that first basket or first round money that went into the karbanot. I'll discuss it a little more. Eina toreim, toreim, ad shomer lehem. The toreim does not begin to be toreim until he says to them, etrom? Should I be toreim? Vehein omrim lo. Trom, 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 shlosh peyamim. They say to him, trom, three times. Now the question of the shlosh pamim here, it looks like there's a mix of girsot. Whether it's a, right, is it trom, 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 or is it shalosh pamim? They said trom back him, or the last possibility is that they did this over three times, like by Ketzirat Omer. By the Ketzirat Omer, they used to say, he used to say to him, liktor, and they say, kotzer, liktor, kotzer. He'd ask three times. So it's either that he asked three times trom, and they answered at trom. It unlikely is that he asked them trom, and they said at trom, at trom, at trom, three times back. Each time, three times. That sounds excessive. But we do find this any time that there was a need for publicity with regards to something that we do, then they used to do this idea of asking and responding and doing it three times. Again, the example of Ketzirat Omer. And there was Lehotzi Miliban Shel Tzukim. The Tzukim who wanted the Omer always to fall out on a Sunday, Mimacharat HaShabbat. And they used to make a big public display of this, that they go out and cut it the night before and make the Ketzirat and the Havat Omer into a big deal to show that it's not like the Tzukim. So supposedly, over here also, the Tzukim had some objection to the Trumat HaLishka, that they believed that it shouldn't be Toreim HaLishka. And this whole idea of Trumat HaLishka was a din dirabonon, or an imposition of the Rabbonon that they didn't like. So the Tzukim believed that all the Karbanot Tzibur should come from private donations. They should not be a public collection. Kalim, in order to do the Karbanot Tzibur, it all should be done out of private donations. And here again, the Chachamim differed, that it has to come from public monies and not from private donations. So the suggestion here is that they made a big public deal out of it against the Tzukim. The other possibility is what we saw earlier in the Masechta, which is they also wanted to make a public deal out of it because they did it three times a year, and they did it to make it public so people would know that even the Shkalim that came later were taken and so on and so forth, that there's a need to make it into a big deal. Now, Taramat HaRishona, when they do the first Truma, they come into the Lishka, into the Otsar, the Chipa B'Katav Liot. He covers it over with Katav Liot, are pieces of leather, throws of leather. What they did was, you have the otsar, you have this room, whatever it is, or place where they deposited the shkalim, and then he went in there and did the truma, he took out three baskets worth. Then they covered whatever was in that room. They covered over all the shkalim that are left, so that way any shekel that comes afterwards will be deposited on top of that layer of leather. The reason for that is, hashnia, then they take off the second one. The second one is only taken from the coins that came after the first truma. So the first truma makes whatever's left behind shirayim, and it cannot be used for truma anymore. That might have been that they put in the boxes, and then they dumped the boxes into the lishka. What was interesting here is that Beit Rabban Gamliel put their coin directly into the lishka. They did not put it in the boxes in the mikdash. They went straight to the lishka and dropped it in there. So now they covered over a layer. It's basically to say that whatever's left behind now already had truma taken from it. So it's already shirayim, and you can't use it again. They put a layer on, then all the coins that go on top of that become the second one, which they did by the time of Atzeret. Post-Atzeret, they used to do the second Truma from coins that were above that level of the leather. Again, they covered over with leather after they'd taken off the second Truma. Hashlishit, then they take off the third one from all the coins that came after the second Truma until Post-Hachag, until before Sukkot. Then they took off a Truma, anything that came after that went into what's called Taklin Atikin, old ones, they go into arrears. Then anything came after Sukkot was put into the pile of the Shirayim and not put into the new Truma. So then, V'lo Haya Mechapeh. On the last one, he did not cover it over. So the last one he didn't cover over, V'lama Haya Mechapeh. So why was he Mechapeh? Shema Yishkach V'Yitrom Min HaDavar HaTarum. Because we didn't want him to take from that which was Tarum. Now, truth is that it's very practical, which is, if he didn't, what do you mean? How is he going to separate, how is he going to differentiate between the new coins and the old coins? So there is an alternative girsa here, which is Lama Lo Haya Mechapeh. Why did he not cover the third one? So that would be the question here. It's Shema Yishkach Vitromin Adavar Terum. Because maybe he'll go back and take from what was ever taken because he will cover it up and then new coins would come on top of that. And those new coins, they think you could take a truma from it. That's not the case because those new coins that come after Prosachag don't go into the truma. They have to stay in the Lishkai Shiraim. So that's why they don't cover the third one. The Taram at Tarishana, the Shem Eretz Yisrael, that's something we quoted earlier in the Masechta. The first one was done for the coins that came from Eretz Yisrael. Hashniyah, the second one, the Shem Krachim Amukufim La, is for the cities that are around it. Now, cities that are around it don't mean directly around it, but the countries that are directly around it. Let's say Ammon, Moab, Mitzrayim. They were close enough by that they got their coins in a little late, but not very late. They got it in by Shavuot, they didn't get it in by Pesach.
So the bottom layer by Pesach.
They expected. These are what they expected. It's not a definitive, it's just that the bottom layer was done for the Truma by Prosa Pesach, Lifnei Pesach. And the coins generally found there were the closer people by, people in Eretz Yisrael.
But yet, they're the...
No, they're the first pile. They're the first pile to be taken. That's right. So they take off the Truma and Prosa Pesach, and then they cover it. And that's done. And the new coins that come in after that point in time and put on top of it. So those are the coins that are expected from the areas around Eretz Yisrael, the closer by areas.
Right.
Ammon, Moab, Mitzrayim, or the outskirts of Eretz Yisrael. And they're taken on Pros Atzeret, right before Shavuot.
Right.
Then the third one... is the Shlishit, the Shem Bavel, or Shem Madai. These are for the people way away. Or the Shem Medinot HaRechokot. Anything that's far away, Rome, Greece, anywhere there were Jews found. There, the expectation is those coins would take the longest to get there. And they were only separated. The Truma was done before Sachag, before Sukkot. That's the layout of this Trumat HaLishka. We're going to have a discussion about each of these items. The first one. Shel Beit Rabbi Gamliel. Ilu Hayu Shnei Kraim. So if you have two praim, praim is from the word kri. Kri is a pile of tvua. Now, if you have two piles of tvua that need trumot and masrot taken off of them, right next to each other, and you take off the trumot and masrot for both of them from one of the two piles, shemelo patar chaviro, did you not take care of the other one? You're allowed to take off trumot and masrot from something that's tevel, as long as they are adjacent to each other, you have two piles of tevel, take it off the one pile, the other pile is fine. The other pile has dismissed their obligation, discharged their obligation with regards to Trumot and Masrot. So the Gemara's question here basically is about Rabbi Gamliel. Why was Rabbi Gamliel making sure to throw the coin in, that his coin went into the part that was the Truma? Even if it's in the Shirayim are good. The Shirayim are fine. Now, the others read this as being a question about if you have two piles of money. And he takes the Truma off one pile of money. Does that mean the other pile of money does not have a Truma taken off it? No, yes it is. Of course it is. So why were Rabbi Gamliel so makpid to make sure that they're going out into the Truma? So Gemara answers, Nachat Ruach Ilahem. It's a Nachat Ruach. It was a good feeling that gave them, Shlo Yehei Karban Mitzkrei Velo Mishalein Tchila. That their money got into the buckets that were used to buy the Korbanot Tzibor, and it got into the first bucket that was used for the Korbanot Tzibor. So not only were they not from the Sharei Elishka, Sharei Elishka is that money that's left over. That money left over is not used necessarily for Karbanot. It's used for public works. It's used for other things. So they wanted, first of all, their money to go to the Karbanot. Number two is they wanted to be in the first one. So he threw it in as they're doing the Truma, and then they get into the first bucket that is used for the Karbanot. Now, I don't love this story, to be honest with you, because I think it sets a bad precedent, which is that here... I would say Gaiva, it's just that, oh, here, you could do the mitzvah a little better. I want to make sure that my coin got into the bucket that's used. But then everybody wants that. Not say everybody, but another whole lot of people want that. And then you create a scenario where everybody's want to come that last day and dump their coin in to make sure that it goes into the Truma. So I think it sets a bad precedent in terms of if it's good enough for everybody, it should be good enough for you. Now, we don't try to be machmir. Now, if it's a silly little chumrah that he did, that's fine. But here it's really taking advantage of their stature in order to get this advantage and placing it in there. Now, the truth is that might be the answer. The answer is that he is the Nasi. And so he gets that right, and maybe it is special for the Nasi. But again, this is just me personally speaking. I'm just being by the Gemara. I think it sets a bad precedent when you have these types of things in Halacha, where people want to do something unique or special. That's not just unique or special then, but the other people want to do as well and mimic them. And then not everybody's going to be able to do it. And by doing that, you make it like as if the regular mitzvah is not good enough. All right, Tani. Shamat et katabliot nasu kulan shirayim. After they finished off the third bucket, what they did was they pulled out the leather layers, the leather mats that set up the layers, they put them out, and everything becomes shirayim at this point in time. So now everything is together, mixed together, and all is shirayim. Tani, shlishit, hi, haita shira shibikulan. The last one that they took off the truma was the richest truma that they took, shayuba, because inside of it were itztalei shel zahav, vidarkonot shel zahav. In the Tosefta, it's itztalei. In the Gemara here, they changed it to istariot. It's most likely that they're the same thing. They're just an exchange of the Samach and the Tzadi, and the Tet and the Aleph, which is that it's Istari or Itztali. The Koron Sozav we already bumped into. Those are large coins on which they consolidated the Shkalim to bring them up to Yerushalayim. Now, the question as to why they mention both Istariot or Itztale and Darkonot, it might be that Darkonot were Persian coins and Itztale were Greek coins. So it depended from which direction they were coming. If they're coming from the Persian side, they were bringing them on Darkonot. If they're bringing them from the Greek side, they're bringing them on Itztale. The last thing is, what does that mean? That this is the richest one. So there are two ways to view this. One is that they filled up the area with these larger coins, meaning that they didn't break them back down into Chatzi Shekel. And they had the same volume of Chatzi Shekel, but they were just in Darkonot and Itztale, which meant that they were significant volume, meaning that was coming into this one. And when they did the Truma, you would end up with more money because they were using larger coins. If you do the Truma, you take off much larger coins. The other possibility is that they were coming from wealthier areas. The people in Bavel and the people in Greece, the Jews that lived in those areas, were significantly wealthier. True today, right? Chutz Laaretz, Eretz Yisrael. All the money comes from Chutz Laaretz, Eretz Yisrael. They were the ones coming last. But they were also the wealthiest communities. And since they were the wealthiest communities, you ended up with large volumes of people with wealth. And therefore, you got the largest number of shkalim that were coming in from those areas. So it's one of those two, or maybe both of them. And that's why the third truma was always the biggest, even though it was the latest. All right, now, Tani. Taramet arishonah l'shem Eretz Yisrael. And here the Braita defines for us something that's important, which is, we saw in the Mishnah, it sounds like they did the first one for Eretz Yisrael, the second one for the areas around, and then the last one for Bavel, Madai, and all the faraway land. But that seems to indicate that people in the first Truma only had a chelik in the Karbanot if they were from Eretz Yisrael. That means the people from afar did not have a chelik in the Karbanot, which doesn't make sense. The whole point of the Truma to Lishkai is everybody has a piece in the Karbanot Tzibur. So here the Braita gives a little more definition to that and adds in one line that makes sense, which is, Tani, Taramet Arishona L'Shem Eretz Yisrael, U'L'Shem Kol Yisrael. It was for Eretz Yisrael and everybody else. Everybody else, not who brought their coins, but who will bring their coins. They did it out of the coins of Eretz Yisrael, but for everybody coming up. Shnia. The second one was L'Shem Krachim Amukafim La. So for the areas around Eretz Yisrael, U'L'Shem Kol Yisrael. And for everybody else, I mean, including Eretz Yisrael, the people already given, plus the people were very far away. And the final one was done for those that are furthest away, plus Kol Yisrael. So in the end, the truth is that every time they take off the Truma, they take it for Kol Yisrael. The reason to identify who it is just to say that these are the Shkalim that are expected at that time. So people who are far away would not say, oh, they passed the time, I shouldn't bring my coins in anymore. They should know that there's later dates for people who are further away and that they can send their coins in. Tani, Natalmin Rishona. So now, when you do the Trumat HaLishka, you have the three baskets. Then you start taking the coins out of those three baskets to pay for the Karbanot Tzibur. Afo Pishiyesh B'Rishona, even though you didn't finish up those three baskets, when you hit Pros Atzeret, Natalmin Ashniya, you take from the second grouping. Once you do the Trumat HaLishka the second time, you stop taking from the first three baskets that you take, and you now start taking from the second three baskets that you took off in Pros Atzeret. Natalmin Ashniya, now you took from the Shniya. Afo Pishiyesh B'Shniya, even by the time you reach Chag, until you reach Sukkot, there's still leftovers in the Shniya. Natalmin Ashlishit, you still take from the third one. As soon as you hit the Truma by Prosachag, you start taking from the Shlishit. Shama Shlishit. If then he finishes up that which was in the third Truma, the third three baskets that you take out, over there, if you finished it off, you used up everything that's in there. Choser l'shnia. You go back to whatever you had left over from the second one when you went into the third one.
Which is more likely because...
You have a huge gap between Chag until Pesach. Shama Shnia, Choser l'rishona. Then he goes back to the first one. Now in a bad situation, Shalmu Shloshtan. They finished off everything. Choser v'shukel. You can't go back to the Shiraim. You have to ask them for new shkalim. You have to ask Bnei Israel to give in a second time, which is amazing. Because they gave in the first time, and there was excess. We know there's excess, because they took off Truma. So there was Shiraim there. Despite the fact that there's Shiraim there, they have to take off new shekel, because the Shiraim are not able to be used for Karbanot HaTzibur. Now Rabbi Meir Omer, Choser the Shiraim. Rabbi Meir says, no, you can go back to that. Why? Sheya Rabbi Meir Omer, Mo'alim b'Shiraim. You can be Mo'el in the Shiraim, Shemit, Starkula, and Besof. So Reb Meir is the Shita To, who says, since you can go back to them in the end, if you run out of money, that means that they're still possibly used for Karbanot HaTzibur, and you can get Mi'ilah. So you could have Mi'ilah. According to the Chachamim, so you can't go back to the Shiraim, there's no Mi'ilah, because the leftovers are only used for public works, they're not used for Karbanot HaTzibur, therefore they're not Kadosh anymore, they don't have a din in Mi'ilah. So because of that, there is no Mi'ilah. So they are the Shita Tam in this way. So that's the difference about the Shiraim. According to Rabbi Meir, you wouldn't have to go back to the people, you go back to the Lishka. Whereas according to Chachamim, you have to go back to the people, which is incredible, that you'd have to go and ask for another Machatzit Shekel, despite the fact that you have excess money. Now it's obvious that the Chachamim did this in a way, first of all, in order to have a certain concept of Truma that gives it a Kedusha, but also so that the leftovers can be used for capital improvements for public works, meaning that they needed that money also for other items. And if they'd used it all up for the Kavanot Tzibur, they'd be short on the public money that they needed for the other items, which we'll see later in the Masechta what those are. Again, now, this is the end of the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi ends here, and now you have another piece from the Bavli added in that is not necessarily connected or easily connected to what we saw before. It's a Gemara that appears a number of times. It's a Braita. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair Omer. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair used to say, maybe it relates to Shel Beit Rabbi Gamliel, that they wanted to do something in a certain fashion. But whatever it is, it was added in later. The Girsaot are very difficult because Pinchas ben Yair appears in a Braita numerous times. It appears in Avodah Zarah, appears in Sotah, appears here and another place in the Yerushalmi. And the Girsaot are different. The reason that it's so famous is because it's the framework which Ramchal used to put together the Mesilat Yerusharim. He uses Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair as his skeleton for what he did in terms of placing together Mesilat Yerusharim. That's why it's so famous. But here we have Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair says, Zrizut meviyah lidei nikiyut. Zrizut, the person who has alacrity, comes to nikiyut. Nikiyut here is not tidiness, but nikiyut means nakimi chait. Someone who's zariz, to make sure that he doesn't get involved in a problem of chait, then he is nakimi chait. He will be nakimi chait. Again, the other girsot might be zihirim. There is zihirut, maybe the day zirizut. There's a devin, the girsa is about this pattern. Nikiyut, maybe the day tara. Someone who is naki michait, then can reach an elevation or status of tara, being tahor. Someone who doesn't sin, then does not only need kapara, he's also not tamei. Chait causes tuma, and also causes avera, meaning that it causes onesh. And you need kapara to get rid of the onesh, and you need something to be able to tahir you, in order to get rid of the tumah aspect of it. So here, someone doesn't sin, is naki michait, also can attain a status of tara. Tara, mivya lidei kedusha. Someone who is tahor then can reach an elevation or status of kedusha, of holiness, because that one person who is tahor then can attain the next level, which is kedusha. Kedusha mivya lidei anava. Someone who is kadosh then realizes that his relationship vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the one who is no bounds, so therefore he's an anav. He's able to understand his place and how small he is, and therefore he's an anava. Anava mivya lidei yirat chet. That anava brings a person to fear of sinning because he realizes how small he is and his relationship with God, how much he owes to God and where he has to listen to the king. Therefore he has yirat chet. Yirat chet mivya lidei chasidut. Someone is afraid of sinning will then come to chasidut, which means that he takes extra steps that are preventative in nature so that he won't sin. He takes boundaries around him. He does more than is expected of him. Chasidut mivya lidei ruach hakodesh. And that chasidut brings a person to the possibility of ruach hakodesh because now he is tahor, kadosh, and he's doing more than expected of him. So then the ruach hakodesh is shoreh on him. The shechina is shoreh on him. And ruach hakodesh mivya lidei tchiyat ha-meitim. And ruach hakodesh brings a person to tchiyat ha-meitim. And now the Gemara is going to say, tchiyat ha-meitim mivya lidei Eliyahu zachor l'tov. Tchiyat ha-meitim brings to Eliyahu Navi coming. So obviously here, this is an issue for some of the Rishonim. Rishonim discuss, we've seen this a number of times, is what's the relationship between tchiyat ha-meitim, olam haba, and Mashiach? And those three things, are they correlated? Are they the same? Are they different? Over here, it's clear here that, right, sequential number one is tchiyat ha-meitim precedes Eliyahu Navi coming to talk about the Melech HaMashiach. So according to this, at least, tchiyat ha-meitim are separate, and it's prior to Zman HaMashiach. Right, so that's just something to keep in mind in the back of your head. Now the Gemara is going to go through each of these stages and bring us psukim that prove that that is the case, which is Zizut mivei lidei nikiyut. Zizut brings it in a key dichtiv because it says by the Kohen Agadol v'chila michaperet haKodesh v'et ol moed v'et hamizbeach v'kriv et haSeir HaChai. That after he finishes up doing the kapara on the inside, then he goes to Seir HaChai. Seir HaChai is the Seir La'azazel. The Seir La'azazel is what's mechaper, gets rid of all the sins of Klal Yisrael. So after he's done by doing all the avoda inside that he does with alacrity, then he comes to the Seir HaChai. Then he comes to get rid of all of his sins. So that's the first proof. Nikiyot mivi lidei tara. How do I know that? Dichtiv. Because it says by Bim lo tizad yada deise. She doesn't, unable to bring her a karban yoledet. V'lacha shtei torim v'shnei bnei yona. Echad eola v'echad echatat v'chiper alea kohen v'tahera. He will be mechaper on her, v'tahera, and then she will be tahor. So then, kaparat avonot is also v'tahera. If you don't sin, if you nakimi sin, then you also reach this elevation, this status of tahara. And then we move on to the next stage, which is tara mivdei divdei kedusha. Tara brings you to kedusha. Now we're back again to the Kohen Gadol and Yom HaKippurim, which is v'zala min adam betzvo shevet pe'amim tiharo v'kidisho mitmol b'nei Yisrael. you're mitaheret, and when you're mitaheret, it's mikadesh, the mizbeach. The kiddush comes after there is tahara. So that's how you know tahara mivei l'idei kedusha. Then kedusha mivei l'idei anava. How do I know that? That's from ki ko amar ram nisa shochein ad v'kadosh shmo marom v'kadosh eskon v'etakav v'al ruach lechayot ruach shvarim ulechayot leiv nidkaim. Plus, we quote, if you say Vayiten Lecha on Motzei Shabbat, to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, despite his greatness, deals with the most downtrodden. So there you see that the Anava associated with the Kadosh. Hashem is Kol Arami Nisa Shochein Ad V'Kadosh Shemo, Marom V'Kadosh Eshkon, so God who is holy, yet V'Takao Shvaruach Chayot Ruach Shvalim. So he deals with the Daka and Shvaruach. He deals with people who are Anavim. Next stage is Anava Mivia Lite Yirat Chet. Anava brings to Yirat Chet. So that's based on a pasuk in Mishlei, which is Ekev Anava Yirat Hashem Osher V'Chavod V'Chayim. Ekev in the footsteps of Anava comes Yirat Hashem. So you see the connection there. Next one is Yirat Chayim Mivial Idei Chasidut. How do we know that? That's from the pasuk in Tehillim, which is Chesed Hashem Meolam V'Ad Olam Al Yirei Av V'Tzidkatol Ibnei Banim. So the Chesed Hashem is on Yirei Av, on those that fear Him. Then Chasidut Mivial Idei Ruach HaKodesh. How do we know that? That's also from a pasuk in Tehillim, which is as dibarta bechazon lechasidecha. You spoke in a vision to your chasidim. Betomer shiviti ezer al gibor harimoti bachur me'am. So there he speaks to his chasidim bechazon. Bechazon means with a vision, with nevuah ruach hakodesh. Then ruach hakodesh mivia l'idei tchiyata meitim. That we know from the pasuk in Yechezkel. This is by the Haftorah that we read by Atzamota Yeveshot, the dry bones that come back to life. So over there it says, "Mevi al date chiyat amitim." The pasuk says, "Venatati ruchi b'chem v'chitem v'nachte etchem alamadchem v'datem ki ani Hashem dibarti v'asiti nuhum Hashem." So the ruach Hashem comes and brings them to life. So that's the ruach hakodesh mevi al date chiyat amitim. The next stage is chiyat amitim mevi al date Eliyahu zavur l'tov, and they bring the pasuk there from Torah of Shabbat Gadol from Malachi, which says, "Hinei anochi shalech lechem et Eliyahu nevi lifnei bo yom Hashem agadol v'hanora." I'm going to send Eliyahu and Navi before the great and awesome day. And so that will be before Zman HaMashiach. That will be the precursor to Mashiach. Tana b'shem Rabbi Meir. Kol mishu kavua b'eretz Yisrael. This should be something that brings the spots to the faces of people made Aliyah. Here, Tana b'shem Rabbi Meir. Kol mishu kavua b'eretz Yisrael. Someone who lives in Eretz Yisrael. And with the Berber Lashon HaKodesh and speaks Hebrew. Okay, that we need some work on. Ochel perotah b'tara, he eats the perot b'tara, meaning he eats of the perot Eretz Yisrael properly, b'tara. B'korek kriyat shema boker b'erev, reads kriyat shema morning and night. Yehei mevusar sheben olam habahu. He'll get the word that he is a ben olam haba. Right, we'll just read the Mishnah, and then we'll continue with that Gemara tomorrow. The Mishnah says, HaTrumah mayu simba. What did they do with the Trumah talishka? To take the Trumah, what was that money designated for? Lochim ba'at midim, the korban tamid of every day, the musafim for Shabbat and the holidays. V'niskehem, niskehem is the, both the liquid niskehem, which is the yayin, and the niskehem, the minchat niskehem, which are the menachot. They come with these korbanot. Ha'omer, ushtei alechem, alechem apanim. These are all korbanot ha'tzibur that are brought, the korban ha'omer, the shtei alechem, which brought on Shabbat, and lechem apanim, that's every week, on the shulchan. V'chol karbanot ha-tzibur. And then here's the catch-all phrase. Any karbanot ha-tzibur are bought out of that money. Shomrei tzvichim b'shvi'it. Those that guard the tzvichim on shvi'it, notim skaram mitshumat ha-lishka. They get their compensation from the tshumat ha-lishka. Here we're talking about in shvi'it year, where you need to have the omer and the shtei alechem come from chadash. They have to come from the new produce. There is no new produce because nobody planted. So what do you have? You have what's called tzvichim. Tzvichim are aftergrowths. Things that, because of the seeds that fell during the harvest, or roots that are left in the ground, they grow in the next year without any human intervention or effort. So despite the fact that they're not working the fields, there's wild items that are growing, wild wheat that is growing from the leftover kernels that fell in the field. So that is what's called svichim. Now svichei shvi'it are mutarim. Later on there's a gzeirah put in place that svichim are asurim. It's a gzeirat chachamim because of svichei kruv. That's from the Mishnayot and Shvi'it and the Gemarot that deal with Shvi'it and Kedushat HaShmitah, that later on they Asur Svichim, which is a huge, huge Gzeirah, not huge in the positive sense, huge, is that makes life so difficult. For these people who had nothing, the Asur also Svichim, it made it extremely difficult in that time. But it's also around the same time period where they start to allow them to import the vegetables from Chutz La'aretz. So there's probably a correlation between the Isur Svichim as well as the imports from Chutz La'aretz. So now here, they have these svichim out there, and they need to be chadash. So what they want to do is the Mikdash needs this item for the Omer. So how do they ensure that it's for the Mikdash? They put guards there to tell people not to take it. It's Hefker. Everything on Shemitah is Hefker. So what they do, they put guards there. But they have to pay the guards. Because if they don't pay the guards, what's going to happen? If the guards go there and watch it on their own, or people take it, it's Hefker. It'll become theirs. Once it's theirs, it can't be used by the Mikdash, because the Mikdash has to be public property. So how do? They pay people to sit and watch it, so it remains public property. You can be a free guard. You can volunteer to guard it without getting any compensation. So Amru lo, the Chachamim said him, Af ata omer she'ein bayim ela mishel tzibur. Don't you agree that the karbanot can only come from public money or public items? Over here, if he guards it free of charge, it becomes his. And then he's going to give it to Mikdash. It can be personal and be given to the Mikdash. So over here, Rabbi Meir differs from the Chachamim. Meir believes you can give personal items to the Mikdash to be used with the Karbanot Tzibur as long as you donate it afterwards to the Shem HaTzibur. So Chachamim are answering Rabbi Meir in their Shita, which is you can't do that. You can't give personal property into the Tzibur, and therefore you can't do this. If he becomes the Shomer Bechinam, he's going to take possession of it, and then how can he give it over to the Tzibur? Rabbi Yossi's Lashitato says you can do that. Even if you have personal property, you can then donate it to the Tzibur to be used on behalf of the Tzibur, not in your personal name. So since that's possible, he can have somebody guard it for free. The Chachamim who don't pose a question to him on that and say, how could you do this? Because you can't take private property and change it into public property. So that's the end of the Mishnah. And again, Tzukim had a different view of this. Tzukim believed that all the Karbanot Tzibur should come from private donations. They should not be a public collection. Galim, it all should be done out of private donations. And here again, the Chachamim differed that it has to come from public property and public monies and not from private donations. Okay, we'll stop over here.